little bit of breaking NFL news. Ben Roethlisberger has a new contract. Essentially, the Pittsburgh Steelers said, we want you back, but we can't pay you the amount of money that you're currently under contract for. You can retire, we can cut you, or we can give you another contract for next year. And we can give ourselves a little bit of salary cap space. And it looks like Ben Roethlisberger agreed to that, and we'll take much less money, I'm sure, and be back for the Steelers for one more year.
Interesting.
And it only says a new contract for 2021. So apparently it's only a one-year contract.
So bizarre. Watching Pittsburgh compete last year, they for the first 10, 11 games of the season, they were the biggest surprise for me in the NFL, or yeah, at least one of the top three biggest surprise for me in the NFL.
I'm sorry, keep going.
Just with their yeah, record and what they were doing. If Big Ben could do it again, I guess come back, give him a year, let him try to surround him with a couple of things and see if that arm is completely gone on him or if he can give us another year.
Yeah.
It's probably the right decision.
Yeah, I'd say so. And let him, and it also lets Ben ride off in the sunset with a little bit of dignity instead of getting cut or, you know, playing one or two years with the, I don't know, the Texans or, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, out in Siberia somewhere. I always hate it when guys end up, you know, look, in some cases it works. Peyton Manning goes to Denver. Tom Brady goes to Tampa Bay. It works. But then there's other guys that go somewhere else, and you're just like, you're just embarrassing yourself. Knock it off.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
I don't like to see that either. I would like to see Big Ben win.
For sure. Not too much, though.
Not too much.
I mean, it's kind of funny. They were 11-0, and then it all fell apart.
Like, was that on him?
I think he had a little bit to do with it. I think the schedule had a lot to do with it. When they started playing tougher teams, that's when it started to fall apart for him.
Still a little bit surprised that J.J. Watt didn't go to Pittsburgh. Knowing now what we know, that Big Ben was coming back.
Yeah.
His brother on the other end. I wonder if Pittsburgh just didn't pursue him.
Would you have been interested in playing? Now, look, I know Ryan didn't play football. But, you know, let's say Ryan is has the same body frame. And
yeah.
By the way, if you've not met Hans and Ryan at the same time, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
None.
It just doesn't make much sense.
I know. I think he's about 5'6", 5'7". 135, 140 pounds. He's got a full head of curly hair.
Oh, yeah, good head of hair on him.
And he's an opera singer.
Yep.
It doesn't make much sense.
I will never forget you, one of the first times we met, you telling me that your brother was a trained opera singer.
Yeah.
And I couldn't wrap my brain around it.
I know. It's crazy. And I grew up going to operas. That's what I did.
Did you enjoy them at the time?
I did. Yeah, I really did. The Fledermaus was one of my favorites. I know
is it really pronounced the Fledermaus?
The Fledermaus, yeah. Pirates of Penzance was another one I really liked. I love Mozart, but some of Mozart's can get really long.
How did Clark handle sitting in an opera?
He loves his son. So okay. He's Scotty G at an orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe it's not your choice, but you love your son.
But you love your son, and then you learn to love what they love.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
And that's kind of how it was for me in operas, but yeah, completely opposite. Ryan and I.
Yeah. I guess my point, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go down the rabbit hole.
Fine.
But would that have been something you'd be interested in doing, playing with your brother? Or do you like, hey, this is my territory, you have your territory, this is mine, this is my locker room, I'm not sharing it with anybody?
No, I think I would have loved it.
Really?
You know, and my Uncle Merlin Olsen and my Uncle Phil Olsen, they played together on the Rams.
That's right, I forgot about that.
I want to say 4 years? Four years, I think, that they were together on the Rams. And I know that they loved playing side by side. So that would have been pretty fun for me. To have my brother on a team would have been – plus, it would have been really nice to have an ally, like somebody who truly has your back in the NFL. So – you know, when you're in different areas of the locker room and you're with different cliques and you're hearing different conversation or a coach is dropping a hint or a line of, you know, if we can't find somebody that can take on a trap, we're going to have to make a move. And, you know, to really have an ally that comes to you and is like, hey, dude, you probably ought to start dropping your shoulder on that trap and bouncing it, because if you don't, you're gone. It'd been really nice to have an ally.
Yeah.
So for J.J. Watt to go and play with his younger brother, T.J., would have been a lot of fun to watch. Especially thinking Big Ben was coming back, and Pittsburgh's got another run at it with one more run before it feels like they're going to go into a pretty big rebuild.
Maybe that warm weather was just too much. Just like, man, I don't want to deal with any. But Houston wouldn't have been awful. Like, I can see a guy that played in Green Bay being like, yeah, that's where I'm going. Or a guy that played in Cleveland, like, yep, I'm going to go to Arizona.
It's still confusing.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I know people are like, well, you go where the money is. I'm sure that the money would have been at a lot of places. And I can't imagine JJ's like, oh, man, if I don't get another dollar, I don't know how I'm going to eat tomorrow. JJ's got to be like, I need to do something to cement my legacy. The only thing I can do that I haven't done is win a Super Bowl.
Correct.
So he chose to not do that.
Hey, by the way, and again, I'm taking us off the rails here again, but Spencer Cox, governor of the state of Utah, used to be a good friend of the show. He's still good.
I don't know. He's kind of ghosted us a bit.
He said, as a press conference, everybody now 50 years of age or over, and anybody with diabetes, and anyone with chronic kidney disease, there's a bunch of other things out there, you can go get yourself a vaccine.
This is moving along a lot faster than I thought it was. We're already to 50?
Already to 50. Come on, 40.
Hey, everybody get in there and get it done. Go get those vaccines, because we are, I can feel, we're getting close to opening.
Let's go get the, oh, and the other thing, too, that's going to come down the pipeline is that Salt Lake County and Davis County are going to be moved to moderate instead of high, so that you can now have gatherings of up to 25 people instead of 10. And I'm sure there's going to be some other things that are going to come out of that. But it's good to move into moderate. So off you go. Let's roll, baby.
Yeah, very cool.
Only, and I think I had like 680 cases today, which is for a Thursday. It's crazy.
Numbers are falling. We had a day of 200 this week, 270-something on Monday.
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine has arrived. They've received 23 doses of that. So the first doses of that vaccine are going to start getting stuck into people's arms today.
That's the single shot?
That's the single shot. How about this? 75% of Utah adults 70 and older have received at least one dose of the vaccine.
75?
75% of those 70 years or older. And 52% of people of the ages of 65 to 69 have also received the at least one dose.
You're talking about in the state?
In the state of Utah, yep.
All good numbers.
Let's go.
Good indicators.
I know there's some people out there that, you know, I know you're getting a little hesitant about the vaccine, and you make your choice, I guess, but the more people that get that vaccine, the sooner we can open this thing up and move on. And I want full stadiums. You can put as much stuff in my arm as you want. I want to go to a stadium that's packing in the fall. I want to go to a basketball game where the arena's got 18,000 and it's rocking.
Yeah, Jazz playoff season with a full arena is very important and very possible.
Well, the White House announced yesterday that, or was it 2 days ago, that they believe that there will be enough vaccine for anybody who wants it in America by the end of May. So by that rationale, you got playoffs. If you've got, you know, mass distribution of vaccines, and everybody's received the vaccine, then I don't see why you can't have a full arena come, you know, late May, early June in the playoffs.
Wouldn't make sense otherwise. Otherwise, why are we doing the vaccine?
Yeah, exactly.
If we've got everybody that has access to it, you can go get it. The people that believe in it and don't want to get the virus, they can go get it. The people that don't believe in the vaccine, first of all, you should probably get the vaccine. If you don't,
then go get the vaccine. Then go
get the vaccine. But, you know, if you got a bunch of people vaccinated, 80% sitting in an arena vaccinated, it's a pretty safe environment.
Yeah.
So hopefully this plays out pretty quickly. It's playing out so much more quickly than I thought. Our country's response to this and getting these vaccines approved and sent out, it blows my mind, the undertaking of the whole process of it. Getting it distributed to amongst 300 million plus is a mind-blowing event.
Matt tweets in, I got my COVID shot yesterday. I fall under the chronic conditions. It was super smooth process and only a slightly sore arm today. Feeling great. Boy, Matt.
Both my parents have their first shot.
I think my folks are getting their second shot today. And I told my dad, I was like, well, I think the second shot's the one that, you know, can rough you up a little bit. And he's like, don't tell your mother that. I had a hard enough time getting her first shot.
Look, bottom line, if Clark and Richard are getting a vaccine.
Yes. That's a great point.
Everybody should be willing.
If you got two curmudgeon elderly dudes that hate just about everything up in Idaho.
And just, you know,
that have some pretty strong opinions about things.
Speculate. I'll say speculate on many things. But very willing to go do that.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy my parents are going to be vaccinated. I think they get their second shot in like 5 or 6 days.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a short time after that that it's supposed to be 98%?
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range,
yeah. And even if you do get it, the severity of it is crazy limited. So, you know, there you go. And I'm sure we're going to get some emails. What's the Microsoft guy? Bill Gates. He's putting microchips in your arm.
That's a crazy thought, though, isn't it?
Little micro machines in there.
They're running around in your blood.
You got Windows XP coming up in your brain.
All of a sudden, you close your left eye, and your right eye has a computer screen that you're looking at.
You double click by blinking twice, you know.
There's been some conspiracy stuff.
Oh, just a bit.
Sure.
Yeah, just a bit. All right, Anz and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. You asked the question, and I thought it was an interesting one at the beginning of the show. What do you look at as some of the signature moments of this Jazz first half of the season?
Mm-hmm.
And
did you look down the schedule?
You know, I got to say, to me, I think the first win against the Clippers was, I think they had...
So January 1st.
I think they were fully healthy.
Yes,
they were. Wasn't the Clippers?
Yes, they were.
I would say that and probably the two Milwaukee games.
So the Clippers game was January 1st. The Jazz won 106-100. And on the court, you had Kawhi Leonard, 39 minutes. Nicholas Batum, 35 minutes. Paul George, 38 minutes. Patrick Beverley, 28 minutes. Serge Ibaka, 34 minutes. That was your starting five. That is the starting five that will start in the playoffs for the L.A. Clippers. And the Jazz did beat that team 106-100. In that game, Mike Conley had 33 points. Donovan Mitchell had 15 points. He was 6 of 14. The team shot 35.7% from three. They limited the Clippers to 38% from the field.
Wow.
So slowed the Clippers down from the field. And you got only 9 points from Jordan Clarkson. I thought that was a game that Jordan went off in. So you ended up with 33 bench points from the Utah Jazz bench. 14 from Derek Favors and 11 from Joe Ingles. That was kind of your formula to beat the Clippers. You're right. Probably one of the bigger games. Again, that was January 1st. Maybe the Clippers were just trying to organize themselves, but I do put a lot of weight into that game.
Yeah, I think we should.
And then you say the two Milwaukee games?
That'd be my thought, yeah.
So the two Milwaukee games, Your most recent win against Milwaukee was February 12th, beat them 129-115. And the game before that was January 8th. You beat them 131-118. 2-0 against Milwaukee, who I think is currently number two in the East.
Yep, right behind Philly.
What about the Golden State win?
I don't know. I mean, I know Golden State's better. I saw that one on there, and they dump truck Golden State too, didn't they?
They did. 127-108. Steph Curry was on the court, ended up with 24 points. Andrew Wiggins was on the court, 13. Draymond Green was on the court, held to 4 points. Oubre Jr. was out there. So Golden State, I think, was fully loaded. I think that was the full Golden State compliment. And they beat him 127-108.
Huge game there. But to your point, and I think kind of what you're angling at here a little bit is I look at wins against physical teams, and I know Milwaukee's not the most physical of team, but the Clippers certainly are. And I, you know, look, I even put the win against the Lakers, even though I know the Lakers were without AD and without Schroeder. And so they're going to be a much better team. But, you know, the Lakers are still a really physical, athletic team, even minus some of those big guys. Obviously, it'll be certainly a huge difference when they're fully loaded. But I'd look at that as a big win. So I think looking at teams that are expected to make deep runs in the playoffs and play a style of basketball that we've seen give the Jazz fits over these last couple of games, you know, losing to Miami, a physical team, losing to Philadelphia, a physical team.
Do you?
I will say, hey, look, had the Jazz won that game last night, I would have said that's the biggest win for the Jazz.
For sure, that would have been the marquee.
Yep.
Absolutely. Do you put any weight into the win that they had over Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago?
Sure.
Joel Embiid not on the court. Other than that, you had everybody.
Yeah. And it was a physical game, and Ben Simmons went off and scored, what, 40-some-odd points in that game?
42, you're correct. Harris had 36 in that game.
Yeah.
Those guys combined for 78 points. Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons.
No.
But that was the game that you got 40 points from Jordan Clarkson off the bench. Donovan Mitchell was 24 points. Joe Ingles had 20. No Mike Conley on the court in that game.
Oh, that's right. Jazz without Conley. I forgot about that.
So I put some weight into that. Again, I love what you just said. You're trying to find the most physical team, because the most physical team that the Jazz beat fully loaded, it would be the marquee win. Because the teams that are playing physical, especially when the officials are swallowing whistles, are giving the Jazz fits, causing problems. And you know, if the officials are just going to keep swallowing their whistle, then maybe the Jazz need to get a little bit meaner. Maybe the Jazz need to take it into their own hands.
Yeah.
Maybe Quinn needs to get a little meaner. Maybe they need to absolutely fight for some type of call justice on a court, because last night it was really egregious. And the officiating was bad.
Yeah. Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network, 1125. Coming up next, we spin the wheel, a little good, bad, the ugly. Coming up next right here on the Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show with Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
I remember one time a good friend of mine and I went to the grocery store and he started throwing things over the aisle to me and I had to catch it. A can of beans flies over. I caught it. Then he threw a glass container of syrup. If I hadn't caught it, it would have been clean up in aisle 5.
That was a long setup for that joke.
That wasn't a joke.
That was a long setup for it. If I would have missed it, it would have been clean up.
No.
Aisle 5.
No, that wasn't even the intent.
Then the CSI Miami theme starts.
If I hadn't caught it, it would have been clean up in aisle 5.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7. Presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty, remember Good, the Bad, the Ugly brought to you by Zero Res. Get those carpet clean, $33 per room. Call 801-288-9376. That's 801-288-9376.
All right, so one of the big concerns was having the Super Bowl in Hillsborough County and allowing quite a few fans into that Super Bowl.
Yep.
And just having the Super Bowl all together, Scotty, there was a big fear that it would become a COVID hotspot, right?
Yeah.
Big time fear.
Oh, yeah. There'd be bodies in the street.
It would explode. Well, Hillsborough County Health Department in Florida released its preliminary report on Super Bowl-related COVID-19 cases on Wednesday, and it is a confirmed 53 cases in the weeks following the Super Bowl. Essentially, nobody got COVID through going to the Super Bowl or working with the Super Bowl. It was over 200,000 people that were involved with game day activities and then also the fans that were there. Now, Chief Epidemiologist Michael Weiss announced cases were a little bit higher compared to the rest of the state, but they followed through on some of the research, and they found that that had to do with parties and gatherings at restaurants and bars, not fan and employee attendance at the game. So pretty cool research, pretty good news that you had a major event in that area in Florida. You had a very small number in Spike, and that number did not come through the event where face masks were required. And believe me, I went into that Raymond James Stadium just a few weeks before the Super Bowl, and I went through the protocols to get into Raymond James Stadium, and it was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. I could not believe what it took to get into Raymond James Stadium. And this was for a bowl game that they were working on their Super Bowl protocols, but it was like, not only is COVID not getting in here, I mean,
nobody's getting in here.
You know, nothing's coming in.
Did they had fans there, right?
No. Yes, actually, they did.
Okay.
6,000, I think. 8,000. 6,000 or 8,000, somewhere in there for that bowl game. So, great job.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I think it's the Big Ten or the Big 12. I think one of those. I apologize. They are allowing 8,000 fans in attendance for their conference tournament. Now, now their tournament is being played at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. So it's a football stadium. So you can spread 8,000. You can spread 8,000 out a little bit, but still, it's a lot of people in there, and they feel like they can make it work.
Good for them. Hope it works.
I really hope
people are safe.
And again, I don't know, I'm probably getting in trouble for saying this. I really wish the Mountain West and the West Coast Conference and I think the Pac-12, I think all three of them aren't letting fans in.
They need to.
I mean, I know it's next week and the turnaround time be short. I wish they'd revise that.
There's a high level of vaccination now.
Yeah.
There's a really high level. You just said it. I mean, you got a lot of older people that are vaccinated. You know, some of the family members, grandparents, moms, dads of these players, they've hit that age level to get vaccinated. Some of them might have had some of the preconditions, and they should be allowed to go in there. I think that there should be a certain fan attendance allowed.
Yeah,
feels like that's where we're at now. Feels like everything else is a little bit excessive. Still, precaution, but I do believe there should be some fans.
I agree.
Look, I mean, we just went through the Super Bowl. They've ran all the numbers. They've done the research. We're talking 200,000 plus that were a part of those game day operations at Raymond James Stadium, and they had 53 accounted positive cases come in the weeks that followed it. Whatever, however many weeks since it's been the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
At least three. So I think you got to look at previous research too.
I think that's really, really important. And I think there's also a concern too for the players because and I you know, look, more often than not, these players have get it, they get over it really quickly. But the NCAA tournament is, I mean, we're just a week away from the NCAA tournament, or 2 weeks away from the NCAA tournament, and I think a lot of these schools are probably nervous that they don't want any transmission issues, because you have to test negative tests on your team for 7 consecutive days leading up to the NCAA tournament. And so I think there's an overabundance of caution, making sure that if you're Gonzaga, that you're not getting a player positive going into an NCAA tournament when you're, you know, the high favorite to win the whole thing.
I can understand that.
All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports. Should we talk about the tweet you sent out earlier today?
So...
Alex Ovechkin.
I didn't realize what I did.
Oh, stop it.
I just was blown away by what I was watching.
His wallet is now about $5,000 lighter. The NHL just hit him with a fine after he said he speared a Boston player in the Wasatch Medical area during the game on Wednesday night. Ovi and the Bruins winger Trent Frederick went after each other during the Washington Capitals tilt with Boston, and Frederick even challenging the NHL legend to a fight at one point in the game. Both players were hit with penalties for the incident, each being forced to sit for 2 minutes. But Ovechkin's penalty needed a little bit more emphasis, $5,000. And frankly, let's be honest here, I think that was worth more than $5,000. When you take a hockey stick and you're hitting the, what do you like to call it?
The beans, the pills,
the
purse sack.
Sure, yeah, all of that.
Coin purse.
Yeah, there's another term you have. I can't remember what it is that cracks me up every time. Anyway, not important. Probably get us into trouble anyway.
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, now I remember. Yeah, I probably shouldn't.
This, Bobby, is the belt line. You never, ever hit below that. Always above, never below.
He took the stick and just rammed it.
Right up there.
Right up there.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal. I've had a lot of people, because I sent out that tweet with the video.
And you said, oh, nuts.
I said, this is nuts, man. Yeah. I didn't realize what I was doing. But
never.
I've had a lot of people say, hey, he deserved that shot because he was taking a stick across the upper part of the arm that is a unguarded piece of the arm, and that he deserved it. I don't know, man. That looks brutal to me.
Frankly, this is hockey, man. You guys are supposed to be tough dudes. You shouldn't be hitting or knocking dudes around down there. That's not how you handle things. I think you should be suspended a game or two for that.
Drop the stick and fight, then.
Fight. You know, come on.
Well, as you mentioned earlier in the game, there was a moment that they squared off. Ovechkin didn't want anything of it. He didn't want any part of it. He held his stick and was looking at the guy like, I'm not dropping my stick and I'm not fighting you. So go away.
Maybe that's why he did it, because he knew he could take it. He's a tough dude.
On another note, NHL is currently ongoing.
That's true.
They are playing games.
Is it?
Sometimes it takes a groin shot to realize that.
If hockey's being played and there's not a groin shot, is it really being played?
I don't know. Not in this area.
Why did you not start this with what's going on with so and so?
Oh man!
Yeah, how did you not? What's going on?
We should have had that in roulette. All right. Hands and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Let's get to the ugly.
And of course, the ugly.
I don't know if you've been up to speed on this story around Creighton's men's basketball coach, Greg McDermott. And, you know, sometimes when you use a turn of phrase, and sometimes, like, I mix metaphors all the time. And I'll look back and I'm like, what are you talking about there? But I have a hard time trying to figure out what he was trying to say here when he told his players in a post-game locker room talk after a tough loss over the weekend. He said, we've got to keep our feet on the plantation. We need to stay in the plantation. And he said it twice. Now, obviously, really dumb thing to say, really stupid thing to say. The players were upset. And he had a long conversation with the players on Sunday night and said he saw the pain in their faces. He sent out an apology on Twitter. And I thought it was, as far as apologies go, look, I'm not condoning what he did, but I think it's a smart way to handle an apology where he said, look, I'm going to tell you exactly what I said. And he listed it out and wrote verbatim what he said. This is what I said. I just was in the heat of the moment, and I just said what popped into my brain. It was obviously very stupid. That's not what I meant. I didn't mean anything along any racial terms. According to McDermott, he said that he offered to the university to resign. The university said, let's let this dial down a little bit. They went and talked to the players. And McDermott said, our guys wanted me to coach, and that's my job. They did not ask for him to resign. They did appreciate his apology, and they're trying to move on from this. And I think that's I like the fact that this is, you know, when somebody does something really stupid, that he owns it, says I was a horrible mistake, that the players are involved in the issue, you know, and they talk to the players. The players are asked, you know, how do we want to go forward? They say, look, we understand it was a mistake. We appreciate him as a coach. We like him as a coach. We don't want him to resign. Let's move on and let's move forward together. The ugly part was the plantation line, though. I mean, like, I don't, like, you know, sometimes you say a phrase that's, you know, that and you mix words and it just comes out wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he got to that, why he would say anything even remotely like that.
I don't either.
Have you ever heard of a phrase that said, like, no, anything with plantation in it?
Mm. No, not in those terms, no.
Like, I know that there's certain terms that you just can't say anymore that used to be part of our lexicon that now you have to realize, okay, that's where that came from, the origination of that phrase isn't good. We probably shouldn't say it anymore. Mm-hmm.
The one about Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, the Russell Westbrook one. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that we probably shouldn't say anymore.
Who said prisoners running the prison?
Exactly. I can't remember who said that.
It was like a Nuggets front office guy or...
Yeah, I can't remember the original. But, you know, things like that. Like,
It was a coach. It was a coach, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's you know, references of, you know, you're off the reservation. You probably shouldn't say that anymore. You know, you go back and you look at these terminologies and you look at the history of them and you're like, okay. But I don't even remember like a pandemic thing ever being a phrase. I don't know why that would pop into your head or plantation. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know why somebody would say that.
It is a little bit different. But like you said, sometimes you're in the moment and those things are said. And this is something I go back to and reference anytime there's a situation like this. Before anybody deserves to be fired or lose their life or job or be coined a racist over something like this, I think it's important to know what their heart is. To know who they are, where their heart was when they said that. That's why in his apology, I think you kind of see that that's not where his heart, he didn't intend, that's not what he meant. It didn't want to come across that way. At least
Yeah.
And the people that make those judgment calls are typically the people that are closest to them, the players, administration. Those are the people that it's really important to, you know, because if they know their coach and they know this man and they forgive him, then everybody else should forgive him.
I just think that, I think you're spot on with that. And also, if the players ever had a vibe that those comments were par for the course, they would say, yeah, he needs to resign.
Well, you and I know of a situation where a guy sent a tweet that kind of came across and was like, boy, I can't believe he got fired for that tweet. Well, the backstory to this man's history was that everybody believed he was a racist. And had felt that he was a racist for many years. And this tweet was just kind of the final indicator. Yep. Okay, this guy, not only is he a racist, he's kind of a vocal racist. That guy deserves to lose his job.
Yep.
You know, I think you really got to seek the heart of a person. And then when you find the heart of the person and you find, okay, they've got a good heart. They don't hate other races. They've got a good heart. Well, at that point, then you say, all right, well, this is why people were hurt by what you said. So don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And guess what? If somebody comes to me and says, hey, Hans, you hurt a group of people. Don't do that anymore. You know what I'm going to tell them? All right. I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt people's feelings. That's not what I'm out here to do. I'm out here to have some fun, talk sports. I'm a lighthearted guy. Tend to care and love most people. I don't have intentions to hurt.
Sometimes you love people so much with your hugs that you do hurt them.
I do like to hug people hard.
Yeah.
I'll hug the air right out of you.
Yep.
But I think you need to seek people's intent. You know, I think that the investigation that they ran on Morgan Scali, I think it was to seek intent.
Yeah.
Let's take a look and see who this person is. Take a really deep dive and see who this person is. And obviously by them retaining him as a coach, they found that nothing led them to believe that he is a racist or a repeater. So with this coach, take a look at him as a person. Ask the people that are close to him, that are around him, that hear him in coaches' meetings. What's this guy like? And find his intent. And then if his intent was not of a racist foundation, it was an accident, all right. Learn from it.
Yeah.
Don't use that again. Don't do that again.
Yep. Hans and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Whole World News coming up next.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined now by Guy Holliday, the former University of Utah receivers coach. We're curious about how it's going for you. Job changes are always hard, and you are suddenly going through one, at least suddenly to us.
I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not disappointed. When Coach and I sat down, I understood it. Believe me, I understood it, because, you know, in this game, the ultimate deal is to win. This part makes me emotional because I got enough texts, enough phone calls from former players and current players that told me I did it right, and that's all that matters. What every fan thinks. No, I don't do this for fans. I don't do this for fanfare. I love my players. And at the end of the day, anybody that knows me knows that's the most important thing. And that's how I weigh it out. And so I did my job.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hope you're all well. All right, time for another edition of, hold on. Yeah! I had to hear the yeah. By the way, all brought to you by EliteWorks. If your website stinks and you want to get it rebuilt, how about get it rebuilt absolutely for free? Call EliteWorks right now. Let's make it happen.
Oh, hey, I wrote the commercial for you. I need to get an approval from you.
Uh-oh.
It's fun. We'll have a good time with it.
844-523-2777. That's 844-523-2777.
Yeah, they can rebuild your website and add a bunch of stuff for free. 844-523-2777. What is the craziest thing you've ever had happen to you on an airplane?
Well, just because the last time you said, hey, what's the craziest thing you've ever done?
No. What's the craziest thing you've ever had happen to you on an airplane? I've had two crazy things.
We didn't have to make an emergency landing, but we had a very, and this was just like 2 or 3 months ago, maybe just 2 months ago. where we had a very significant medical issue, and we had several ambulances and cops waiting for us.
Did you? You had to divert?
No, we didn't divert. It happened close enough, and we were flying to Salt Lake City, but we landed, and we all had to wait while a bunch of medical personnel came on, and we had the first time the stewardess came on and goes, "Is there a doctor on the plane by chance?"
Oh.
And the person like an aisle up from me just, "Yep," and they went back, and I don't know what happened. I wasn't paying attention. It was way in the back, so I didn't see what was happening. But
a bad situation.
The person was able to walk off the plane, but they got him in an ambulance and got him out fast.
I've had three crazy incidences on an airplane. You know the one I talked about, BYU football team.
Oh, yeah.
Flying to Fresno, and a warthog over Idaho near Gowan Fields coming right at our plane, and we had to go into a nosedive. That was crazy. And I was on a plane with John L. Smith. He just happened to be in a seat next to me on a plane when I was being recruited. And we had something go wrong with the landing gear, so we had to circle for an extra 2 hours.
Yeah, that's no fun.
And then we were traveling with the New Orleans Voodoo, and a 16-year-old kid fell asleep and had a frightmare and was a sleepwalker and stood up out of his seat and ran to try to get into the cockpit and was trying to open the cockpit door. And this was only 4 years after 9/11. That kid got trashed.
Yeah, I bet.
That kid got whooped. And then once he woke up and he was all bloody, they were like, the parents, he was sitting next to his parents. The parents were like, "Don't hurt him. He's just a boy." And everybody's like, he's trying to take down the plane.
No, yeah.
So crazy times. Well, this is a crazy situation. It happened in Sudan. These two pilots are just flying this passenger flight, and one of the pilots felt something brush against his leg, and he looked down, and it was a cat. And so it startled him because he's like, "What the heck is a cat doing here in the cockpit?" Well, the cat got nasty. It started clawing at him and, the whole cat thing.
I hate cats.
So the guy went to kind of grab it, and it batted at him, and they were like, "Crap." Well, this cat starts causing all kinds of chaos in the cockpit. So they had to divert, emergency landing. They instantly went down to the ground because they couldn't get a hold of the stray cat in the cockpit.
I like this line. The cat's a feral cat, a feral stray, most likely found a concealed space in the cockpit to sleep before being jostled awake when the plane went into flight. If you're a cat and you're cozying up and you got a nice little warm spot.
Yeah,
and
found your warm spot.
And the next thing you know, this plane's taking off. Yeah, you're going to be a little cranky.
Yeah, he was inconsolable, and they could not get a hold of this cat. So they took her down quick. Got this.
Okay, they took the plane down. They didn't take the cat down.
No, they didn't take the cat down. They took the plane down and got the cat contained. But you know what happens to feral cats in Sudan.
They're
don't ask me what happens to them. I don't know.
I don't know. Are you saying like when the plane took off, that's what dinner service was or what?
Like, how'd this one get free? Why is this one walking? Oh, my gosh. Feral cat. Hey, cat attacks are
no joke.
I've been attacked by a cat. I had a dog get attacked by a cat. My little Gizmo, my little Lhasa Apso, was attacked by a feral mountain cat.
A mountain cat?
Don't call it a mountain cat.
About ripped his whole
arm. That's what we call
off.
A bobcat.
Well, he was a bobtail, but he wasn't a bob. Because those bobcats are big.
Yeah.
But this cat was mean. Nasty, enraged, and Gizmo was caught in a little space with this cat, and he was not winning that fight. Cats are so mean, and their bites make your arm itch.
Oh, yeah. Man, you get those, you see the claws on those things. I mean, or the fangs on those things.
Yeah, they sink in
yeah.
deep, like needles.
Yeah, no bueno. All right, Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone. The great Kurt Heelan joins us next. We'll chat some NBA hoops with him right here on the Zone Sports Network.